Laudator Jesus Christus. Vatican and World News.
In the headlines this Sunday, the 25th of October, Pope Francis announces a consistory for the creation of 13 new cardinals. More restrictions are announced in European countries to help curb the spread of the coronavirus. And Lithuania and Ukraine go to the polls in the Vatican. I'm Lydia O'Kane. The Church is to get 13 new cardinals. The Pope made the announcement following the recitation of the Sunday Angelus. Sister Bernadette Rees has more.
The Church will have 13 new cardinals at the end of November. 9 of them are younger than 80 and therefore have the right to participate in a future conclave. 4 others are older than 80 years of age. Pope Francis's announcement came as a surprise after the recitation of the Angelus on Sunday. He communicated the news to the faithful present in St. Peter's Square, as well as those connected throughout the world via television and radio. 2 of the new cardinals work in the Roman Curia. The Secretary General of the Synod of Bishops, Maltese Mario Greg, and the Italian Marcello Semeraro, former Bishop of Albano and the new prefect for the Congregation of the Causes of Saints. 6 others are pastors in the church throughout the world. Archbishop Antoine Kambanda of Kigali, Rwanda, Archbishop Wilton Gregory of Washington, D.C., the United States, Archbishop Jose Fuerte Avincula of Capiz in the Philippines, Archbishop Celestino Spraco of Santiago, Chile, Bishop Cornelius Sim, the Apostolic Vicar of Brunei, and Archbishop Augusto Paolo Lodjudice of Siena in Italy. In addition, the Pope has also appointed the current guardian of the Franciscan Sacro Convento in Assisi, Father Mauro Gambetti. The 4 cardinals over 80 are Archbishop Emeritus Felipe Esquivel of San Cristobal de las Casas, Mexico, the former Apostolic Nuncio and Permanent Observer to the United Nations, Silvano Tomasi, Capuchin Father Raniero Cantalamessa, the preacher of the papal household, and the pastor of the Shrine of Divine Love, Father Enrico Ferrucci. Cardinals wear the color red, which indicates their willingness to sacrifice themselves to the point of shedding their own blood in the service of the successor of Peter. And even though they reside in the remotest regions of the world, they become the titular of a parish in the eternal city, so that they are incarnated in the church of which the Pope is bishop. I'm Sister Bernadette Rees.
Cardinal-elect Wilton Gregory released the following statement on the news from the Vatican this afternoon. He said he was grateful and humbled to be named as one of the 13 new cardinals. He also said this appointment will allow me to work more closely with the Pope in caring for Christ's Church. Archbishop Gregory was installed as Washington's Archbishop in May 2019 and will become the first African-American to be elevated to the College of Cardinals. Meanwhile, Cardinal-elect Silvano Tomasi, a former permanent observer to the UN in Geneva, gave his reaction to the news.
First of all, I am totally surprised and I am grateful to the Pope for thinking of me and for the sign that he gives that affects not only my person but the community to which I belong. The Scalabrini Fathers, and the service that I have carried out in the diplomacy of the Holy See. So it's a combination of elements that converge in this recognition. I feel very grateful to the Holy Father, Pope Francis, and I think this recognition demands a further commitment to the service of the Church and of the Holy See.
The Pope on Sunday during the Angelus expressed his concern at continuing violence in Nigeria. In words from his studio above St. Peter's Square, Pope Francis said he was following with particular concern the news that is coming out of the country. He spoke of the violent clashes between security forces and a number of young people protesting. He also prayed that any form of violence might be avoided and that social harmony would be sought in the promotion of justice and the common good. Spanish Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez announced a new state of emergency on Sunday in an effort to curb soaring coronavirus infections. The decree will give regions which decide on their own health matters the power to impose stricter restrictions on movement, including curfews. A growing number of regions had been calling on the government to implement the measure to allow them to impose restrictions. Elsewhere in Italy, at least a month of new curbs across the country were imposed on Sunday to fight rising coronavirus infections. The curbs include mask wearing outdoors, shutting down gyms, pools and movie theatres, and putting an early curfew on cafes and restaurants. Worried about crippling Italy's stagnant economy, especially after 10 weeks of a severe lockdown earlier in the pandemic, Italian Premier Giuseppe Conte ruled against another heavy nationwide lockdown. Speaking to France 24, microbiologist Simon Clark from the University of Reading addressed the issues of curfews and testing.
Well, it depends on what you ban people from doing, and it depends on what time of day. Here in the UK, pubs, our public houses, our bars are closed at 10 o'clock, whereas they'd normally go for an hour and a half extra. And you do have to ask the question, how big an impact does that have? And I don't think anybody really knows for sure, because, of course, when you close everything at a certain time, then people pile out onto the streets and mingle there. And that provides another opportunity for some fresh interpersonal interactions that wouldn't have been had in the pub. There is no limit on the amount of testing that you can do. And as more people get the virus, as there is more virus in society, the more testing needs to be done. I mean, you need to keep on testing until the numbers stop going up. Now, they either stop going up because you've reached a point where you're testing enough of the population, or that the virus just isn't going up anymore. So they need to just keep ramping it up. It's impossible, really, to put a number on it, to say to you so many million tests a day need to be done in order for them to be successful.
Despite the raging coronavirus pandemic, polls opened Sunday for elections that could impact government leaders' future in two East European nations. In Lithuania, a parliamentary runoff is likely to change its government. And in Ukraine, local elections are a popularity test for last year's elected former comedian turned president. Stefan Boss reports.
Polling stations opened Sunday across Lithuania for a parliamentary runoff ballot. The winner will have to tackle a growing health crisis and high unemployment due to the coronavirus pandemic. Sunday's ballot was expected to bring a change of leadership in the southernmost Baltic nation, which was once part of the then Soviet Union. A center-left coalition has governed it for 4 years, but in the first round of voting on October 11th, three center-right opposition parties finished with a combined lead. That trend was due to continue in Sunday's final round, in which 68 of the 141 seats in Lithuania's Legislative Assembly, the Seimas, are up for grabs. The other seats were distributed after the October 11th first round of voting, which resulted in the opposition conservative Homeland Union Party winning almost 25% of the vote. The ruling Farmers and Greens Party received roughly 17.5%. Analysts say that if the Conservatives are successful on Sunday, they would likely try to form a new ruling coalition with the other two center-right partners. Lithuania, a member of the European Union and the NATO military alliance, has strong democratic traditions since declaring independence from the Soviet Union in 1990. It has played a significant diplomatic role as protests in Belarus, its southern neighbor, unfold against that nation's perceived authoritarian leader. Elsewhere, Ukraine's mask-wearing President Volodymyr Zelensky and his wife Olena Zelenska were among those voting in local elections, but beyond some cameras and surprised voters, it seemed a subdued affair. That is in sharp contrast to the enthusiastic crowds that welcomed the president when he was elected last year. The 42-year-old former comedian has seen his popularity dwindle steadily. That's in part because living standards continued to plummet and corruption remained widespread in his former Soviet nation. Additionally, international efforts to negotiate a settlement to the separatist conflict in eastern Ukraine have failed to yield tangible progress. Unlike in Lithuania, the elections in Ukraine could not immediately lead to a change at the top. But observers view Ukraine's local elections as a popularity test for the nation's increasingly embattled president. Zelensky tried to shore up his sagging popularity by coupling the local elections with a survey asking voters for their views on legalizing cannabis for medical use. They are also requested to give their opinion on introducing life sentences for corruption convictions and creating a free economic zone in the country's east. But opinion polls suggested it may not be enough to boost support for his Servant of the People Party. It was named after a popular television series in which Zelensky played a schoolteacher who unexpectedly becomes president. Surveys indicated that Zelensky's party candidates would likely perform poorly in Sunday's local races for mayors and municipal councils across the country. Instead, parties of former President Petro Poroshenko and ex-Prime Minister Yulia Tymoshenko were due to win most of the mayoral and council seats in the western part of the country. And pro-Russia party Opposition Platform for Life was positioned to make a strong showing in the mostly Russian-speaking east and south of Ukraine. Voting was not held in areas of eastern Ukraine that are controlled by Russia-backed separatists. For Vatican Radio, Vatican News, I am Stefan Bos, reporting.
A suicide bombing at an education centre in Afghanistan has killed at least 24 people, including students. Nathan Morley has more.
The so-called Islamic State claimed responsibility for the explosion, but failed to provide any evidence supporting their claim. At the same time, the Taliban has rejected being connected to the incident. According to local police, in addition to those killed, the blast injured 57 people in western Kabul. Most of the victims were aged between 15 and 26. Speaking on Saturday, soon after the atrocity, an Interior Ministry spokesman said the attacker was trying to get into the education center before being halted by armed guards. A group connected to the so-called Islamic State claimed responsibility for a similar suicide attack in the summer of 2018, which left 34 students dead. Separately, a roadside explosion killed 9 people in eastern Afghanistan on Saturday after a bus carrying civilians ran over the device. Police said a second explosive was triggered, killing 2 police officers who were making their way to the scene of the bus bombing. In a separate development, the Afghan government has claimed Sunday that it has killed Hussam Abul al-Rauf, a top al-Qaeda propagandist who's been sought for years by the FBI in the United States. He had served for over a decade as al-Qaeda's media chief, offering audio statements and written articles backing up the group. He was a frequent contributor to their social media channels. For Vatican News, this is Nathan Morley reporting.
President Donald Trump voted in his adopted home of Florida before hitting the campaign trail for rallies in 3 swing states on Saturday. He joined more than 54 million Americans who have cast early ballots ahead of the November 3rd election. Democratic rival Joe Biden also hit the campaign trail on Saturday, speaking at a drive-in rally of supporters in the battleground state of Pennsylvania, where he warned of a looming dark winter unless the Trump administration does not do a better job at fighting the coronavirus. And finally, the United Nations has announced that 50 countries have ratified a UN treaty to ban nuclear weapons, triggering its entry into force in 90 days. The move was hailed by anti-nuclear activists, but strongly opposed by the United States and the other major nuclear powers. As of Friday, the treaty had 49 signatories, and the United Nations said the 50th ratification from Honduras had been received. Well, that brings us to the end of this edition of Vatican and World News. For more on these and other stories, be sure to check out our website at www.vaticannews.va. In the Vatican, thank you for joining us.